I'm Terry Thornton. I'm curator of education here at the Modern, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to our Tuesday evenings at the Modern Lecture Series. I know that we have some people here tonight from the College Arts Association Conference that's in Dallas. We're happy to have you. I'm glad you you happened in on what I think is to be an exceptional lecture this evening. But I did want to let you know that it's my understanding that the bus, if you took the bus over, it leaves at 8 o'clock from the Amon Carter. So at about 10 till for everybody else, there will be some people who get up and leave. And that's not a comment on Ingrid's presentation. So if you will just watch your watches, we won't alert you, but we also will not be offended when you need to get up and leave at about 10 till. Crazy me. I thought I was going to do this without my glasses. Just a second. I'm sorry. I apologize. I could do most of it without reading it because I'm a real fan of Ingrid's work, but there are a few particulars I want to be sure and mention. So, before we get started with that, I want to just tell some of you that are new to the series that this is an ongoing series. We have it in the fall and then in the spring, and it's a 10-week series starting last week. This series, I have to say, has enormous potential, promise. I want you to all get the schedule and start marking off the ones that you can't afford to miss. For example, next week, Noah Semblist is here. Noah is an artist, a writer, a curator, and I'm sure there's more to that list that I'm leaving out. And he's here to discuss his interest in the politics of identity and the way that manifests itself within formal investigation. His work through all these various forms questions if there is any possibility left for political content in abstract form. And it sounds like an incredibly interesting topic to me. It might sound a little dry, but I have to tell you that he's one of the best speakers I've ever heard, and he believes in this with all of his heart. So I encourage you to be here next week because people will be talking about it afterwards, and you don't want to miss out. Tonight, the LA-based artist Ingrid Kalam is here to share her large-scale pseudo-abstract paintings for which every mark, shape, color carries a story. Coming from the Bronx, Ingrid received a BFA from SUNY Purchase in 1987. She attended the Skowhegan School of Painting and Sculpture in 1995, and she received her MFA in Art and Film from the California Institute of Arts in 1996. As I reminded those of you who were here last week, Ingrid was here in 2000, and even then, as a young, but at the time already quite accomplished, artist who had been chosen for that year's Whitney Biennial, she gave a wonderful presentation full of excitement and discovery. At that time, she had been actively showing for 4 years, and she has developed and maintained an incredibly active career since. Ingrid's exhibition record is impressive, and it is indicative of her unstoppable attitude and approach to art making. Crossing the globe, she has traced stains and graffiti from the embankments of the LA River to streets and sidewalks of New York, Las Vegas, and Seoul, Korea. As mentioned, Ingrid's work was chosen for the 2000 Whitney Biennial, and more recently, group exhibitions have included Extreme Abstraction at the Albright Knox Art Gallery in Buffalo, and Painting Pictures in the Digital Age from the Kunstmuseum in Wolfsburg, Germany. Ingrid is represented by Gallery Schmidt Maxolik in Cologne, Germany, and the James Cohen Gallery in New York, where her solo exhibition titled Constellations met critical acclaim just this past fall. She also had a solo exhibition in 2007 at the Indianapolis Museum of Art titled Ingrid Kalam, Traces of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, in conjunction with her project there, and I believe that is going to be at least in part the subject of tonight's presentation. It is no surprise that Ingrid's work is in major museum collections, including the Whitney Museum of American Art, the Museum of Modern Art in New York, Los Angeles County Museum of Art, and the Museum of Fine Art in Houston. She has been the recipient of grants and awards, including the Jacob K. Javits Fellowship and the City of Los Angeles Individual Artist Fellowship. And interestingly enough, she was a 1996 Grammy nominee for the music video long form at the National Academy of Recording Arts and Sciences in L.A. She has been invited this year, in 2008, as an artist in residence or for the artist residency at the Albright Knox Art Gallery in Buffalo. And we are so fortunate to have her here with us tonight to talk about her work. So please join me in welcoming Ingrid Kalam.
Hi. So I'm just going to start talking because I have a lot of material to get through all this, and I think Terry covered a lot of ground there. Oops. Whoa. I went to the end first. Well, I'm actually starting this talk a little earlier than I think I started in 2000. I'm starting with work from before I went to CalArts, and maybe as I get older, it'll start expanding both ways. But I just wanted to show you. Before I went to CalArts, I lived in New York and worked for artists and painted in oil paint, acrylic paint, all this stuff. For the last like 10 years or something, I've been working in mostly in enamel paints in one form or another. Most everything you see that's a painting is enamel. This is encaustic, though, and it's a small thing based on, it's called Spine 3, and it's based on a vertebra. It's about this big. And this is brain. This is brain 2 or something. I did a series of brains and intestines when I was at CalArts because I was thinking about, the body. And that was around 1990. This is 93. The other one was 92. Then this starts what I think of as my current body of work, although this is called Schflu. This is a 2-foot square painting, and it's called Lubbub Zerpau. It's enamel on aluminum, although when it was repainted. I did it in school, actually, first as a on masonite. It's based on 30 stains that were in my studio, which I developed the system around, and I will show you what the system turned into. This is not Schflu, so I went through about 3 years of work in one slide. And this is when I started tracing on the streets, I started using colored pencils to indicate different stains. I started tracing on the street after working for 3 years in with these 30 stains that I added together, because I was my cousin came to visit and told me about my grandmother's death, which I knew. My grandmother had died about 5 years before, but she and my mother had gone down. I hadn't gone down to Florida, but my grandmother had died and wasn't found for several days, so she disintegrated. And my mother was so horrified by it that she only told me about not being able to take the knives into the airplane that she took back from her. So, you know, whatever, how your mind works. Anyway, at that point, I became not afraid to work with something in life rather than the system based on something removed that was completely kind of an art bubble, which was these 30 stains that were, you know, they were life, they were studio life, but I wanted to expand. And I started tracing on the street. This is called Ohm's Blink. It's 24 inches square. I want to go back to this just for a second. And I'm still working in color pencils and enamel and on oil, but so I want you to see how much they've changed. And I've started everything as something that I could do alone easily, and it's turned into quite a an event. This drawing is for the next painting. So this is 30 inches square, and it was based on tracings that I did from the street outside of Post Gallery, probably in downtown LA, and it exactly, you can see, I decided what is visible. I paint it like a puzzle so that the orange is over, it's just painted like a puzzle. This is called Pachu-Choo-Choo. It's 4 foot square, and as I started using, I was using those 2 foot squares for several years, but as I started to be able to, as the stains I was tracing had an infinite number of detail, I could expand the scale of the paintings. This is an example of a stain. This is not what I work from. My work is all about, based on tracing, which is the one-to-one scale information. And one of the things, I had to crop my feet out of this, for one thing. And for the other thing, this is not a very big stain. It's maybe this big. So if I was trying to photograph a stain, I would have to get some kind of track thing and you know, then piece it all together in Photoshop, and it would be quite elaborate and not effective. I actually do it the most efficient way, I think, possible for the scale of work that I'm doing. This is Kufsquip, and it's, this is probably 1999 or 8. This is 1999, called B-B-B-Burger-Up-B-B-B-B. And it is about, I think this is 29 feet by 25 feet, yeah. And this is installed at Site Santa Fe for a show called Postmark and Abstract Effect. And I made it for this room so that it was exactly as big as the room. You could just walk around it. I visited before. And I was interested in making a picture that you couldn't see. I don't think of it as sculptural, though it involves installation-type planning. It is... I was interested in making a picture that you can't see, you can't ever get an accurate picture of it, because it's you have to move around it, and that perspective is always changing it. And it is different from the paintings, because it is an image of the whole. So I made a all of these are tracings from stains, like I photographed for you, so you understand. That I place on the ground in my studio, and then trace a whole, for this, it's an image of the whole constellation, which is invented. So my basic constant are the tracings, but I invent what they become. So this is a constellation of all Los Angeles stains. It was Hollywood, downtown LA, and Silver Lake, I think. And the paintings would be a detail of how those shapes overlap, but still in the same scale of information, just a smaller sized painting. Okay, and the drawings are what I used to make the painting, and they're more like an X-ray. So the painting is kind of like how it would be. When I was starting this, I was thinking still about the body, and I was thinking about that it's a model of abstraction, and that's the three different things of information, you know, like your silhouette, how like if you went inside yourself and had an orthoscopic, you know, so there's lights in there and you saw all this stuff. And then if you had an X-ray, all of those are accurate information, but it's a different way of looking at it. And then how we understand the whole of ourselves has to do with all of those things coming together, which is very complex. And I think that's much more abstract than abstract painting, generally is, but I thought abstract painting is a perfect place to talk about abstraction because you're already thinking about abstraction. This is a detail of that, and you can see in it's enamel paint on trace mylar, which is like a drafting, architect's drafting mylar. It's very heavy duty. It's also what I do the tracings on. This is called Tinquit, and it's 2 foot square. The way I've structured this particular talk is that I'm showing you a lot of different projects that I've worked on, and I go back and forth. It's kind of structured the way that I work, actually, which is that I go back and forth between different kinds of work. The painting is very contemplative, particularly when it's a small painting, and then I do these larger productions that I go out and have to organize people to help me, and you'll see. But the beginning, the Hollywood was a very introverted beginning of that, where I wouldn't let any, not Hollywood, the orange piece that I made in Hollywood was, you know, I didn't let my husband come out with me. I painted the whole thing myself, and it was, you know, it's changed. I had an idea after doing that I didn't know why I was using the gallery anymore as the container for this hole that would be the silhouette of my body or whatever, the silhouette of this constellation. I thought that that I should use buildings that meant something in relation to my ideas about mortality. And the three buildings I thought of in 1999 were the New York Stock Exchange, trafficking economics and, you know, wanting to exist in the world monetarily. I don't know. It was originally, I think, that big black church down there. I'm not remembering its name right now. But down in Wall Street. It was going to be Griffith Observatory. That piece was called Secular Response, that idea of these three buildings to contain constellations. It actually, I started it in 1999, and it ended up taking, I'm still working on it. But I finished tracing the last place in 2005, which was actually Lowell Observatory in Arizona. This is us tracing in, some actors, Argentinian actors, who I hooked up with to help me trace in Wall Street. And this is a trace, one of them, Constanza, tracing this splash. And just to give you an idea, what I would say, okay, I would go around and see the chalk lines, and I would say, okay, I'm interested in this, and I don't want any of the gum, and I want it to the curb, you know, so that I'm directing it, but they would use their own interpretation. It's also, we're making closed shapes, so it's rules. There's rules that I do it, but then their subjectivity comes into play with how they translate it. Anyone whose work I didn't like, of course, I didn't keep them on, so that my subjectivity ruled. But this is called hung, and actually, it's kind of coincidental. I think this stain, the big red stain, actually looks a little bit like it might be that stain that Constanza's tracing. But I have hundreds of stains, so who knows? It's 6 foot square, and this is probably about 2000, so around the time I came last time. I traced in Wall Street, actually, I was invited by Triangle Workshop to do a residency, and I used my studio on the 91st floor of the World Trade Center in October 2000 to do these tracings in Wall Street. And I visited the Stock Exchange, and I realized I had to have a lot more stains. That's why I hired all these people. That was the beginning of, like, to fill the New York Stock Exchange, I'm going to have to get going. I can't, like, one person is not going to do it. So we traced in Las Vegas. And then we placed all of the stains I had. I finally got permission in 2001 to go and trace. So this is us, the regular floor you can see at the edges. This is the tracings we brought in from Los Angeles, Las Vegas, and Wall Street, New York, to place on the floor and then put a sheet of mylar on top of it, and then trace the silhouette of the hole. So this is line drawing instead of enamel paint, because, of course, it was 2 weekends was a lot to get, and it was a lot to do. And this is actually a time, there's people in there, but it was kind of dark, so we had to do a long exposure. This is me taking the different stains and place them around all these posts and booths. So basically, in the New York Stock Exchange piece, you have posts around cell-like shapes, actually, and the only thing I took from the New York Stock Exchange was its floor as a container, not any of the stains on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. Crews of seven people around the clock to do these tracings, which was quite a circus. This is the piece. That piece took a while to produce. It ran into some difficulties, and then, like, sort of the financial sort, and then it went underground and came up in 2000. Let's see, I made it in May 2001. Then 9/11 happened, which I would never have gotten access to it these days. And then I think I didn't start the first piece, Secular Response. This is Secular Response 2A until 2002. And then this is in 2004. It's called Secular Response 2AH, installed at the Kunstverein Hanover in Hanover, Germany. It's 100 feet long and 12 feet high. The full drawing is 15,000 square feet, though. So this is a tiny excerpt of a giant constellation that I couldn't... Well, I don't know. Buildings are getting bigger. Maybe I could show 15,000 square foot drawing somewhere, but not counting on it. There's four sister pieces of this, which three of them are green. This is something I was working on. More paintings are still happening. This is 2 foot square in 2002. And actually, it's kind of a relief to go back into painting after organizing this giant thing that's unwieldy and is much more like film, that you have to roll with the punches of whatever happens to you. This is boop, boop, boop. I had a pair. These are all onomatopoeic titles that aren't meant to illustrate the picture and the image sort of lope along beside each other. They're not meant to actually look like this. Doesn't look like beep, beep, beep to me, but they're sort of tandem images. So, and at this time I had a parrot, and I think he was doing a lot of translating of sounds for me. This is called Bach. It's 6 foot square. This is 2004, I believe. This is Secular Response 2A... Oh, dear. Secular Response 2B, right? All the 2As were green. 2B, 2 is the stock exchange. Secular Response 1 was the church. That was the first one I'm doing, and I'm just skipping it because, whatever, we don't have time. And this was in Seoul, Korea. And something started to loosen up in me about... what it could be, that it didn't have to, that it could be more super graphic, like, even have this information and be more playful with the colors, more like the paintings in a way. It's a wall painting. I don't know, it's pretty big. This is me tracing in Seoul. I didn't do much tracing in Seoul, and I generally, when I travel for shows, I don't trace. I do big trips to trace. But in this case, I really loved this. It's a one-way. It says one way. And it was the climate had cracked it up so much. It was painted many times. And it related to what I was tracing at the time in L.A., which was the L.A. River. I think this is 2005. This is the L.A. River, and that's me tracing on it. And I was interested in the graffiti. I started to move away. I didn't think of it at the time as moving away from the splashes and stains from the street, but I started to really like the scale of these marks. I thought of it as a conversation. I started tracing it around the time that George Bush was elected the first time, and I started to wonder about the America I was in. And anyway, I was just thinking about how we know about the life that we're in and what the conversation is. And this seemed, it wasn't related to politics or anything particular, but it was a big conversation that was public and kind of neglected. But interesting and ever-changing. This piece, I'm still working on this giant. It's a 60-foot-long palimpsest of people, graffiti on graffiti on graffiti, and it keeps changing as I go, which is kind of funny. And the LA River allowed the drawings to change in this way because there's nobody driving past the one-way sign. The one-way thing was like an aerobic exercise. This was like, you know, we went and stayed for, we could go back and back and back, and they stayed, stayed, and we could get a lot of detail. The drawings started to take another role. I've been making lots of drawings. This is number 181 work. I dropped the working because the drawings at this point, I was working in my studio and the drawings became more primary, and because I couldn't make paintings for a little while, and that meant that I didn't make drawing the choices, color choices in the drawings to make a painting anymore. I started to kind of glaze with the color pencils. This is color pencil and trace mylar. Every mark in there is a different tracing. So, and you know, the color, like I would have a fluorescent pink next to a hot pink, and it would make this kind of very vibrant, beautiful thing that I would never have chosen in the past because I was trying to make hot pink next to, you know, a cadmium red or a green so that I would be able to tell the difference when I was transferring it into a painting. This is a detail from number 179 working drawing, just to give you a little bit better idea of, that's probably closer to the scale it is. It's a giant, I should tell you how big that one. That one is 11 feet high by 7 feet wide. So it's a problem for doors, except not a museum like this. Anyway, this is called Frogtown Turf War at the ICA in Philadelphia. It's related to that Seoul, Korea piece, Secular Response 2B, that because I started using that super graphic Ness, but I simplified the image. I was actually going to bring Secular Response 2 into this, but it was a giant, narrow, weird space. It's a ramp, and you can see it best from outside. And what I did is use only one piece of the graffiti. Each wall is only one palimpsest of graffiti, so that instead of me layering all those constellations, I just traced something that was already a constellation out in the world. And then I was working at the time with homeless youth at a shelter kind of place in LA, and I noticed that everybody kept bringing up their name, they would be writing names. They weren't artists particularly, and any more than anybody, everyone is an artist. And but names kept coming up, and so I was interested. It kind of validated this embracing a simple thing to see that someone was there and this war to be there. And I couldn't, this is so large that I couldn't see, like, it actually says some bad things in there. I was looking at it kind of abstractly, I must say. Okay, bad things like, I think that guy's smoking crack, you know, and stuff that I don't agree with, which was interesting putting it up. This is Lowell Observatory in Flagstaff, Arizona, and this is probably 2005. So this is contemporaneous with what I just showed you. And this is Secular Response 3, and I changed the way that I work with that in that... Wait, let me go back. So I was interested in I don't think I finished telling you why I chose these three buildings. It was church, economics... religion, economics, and science. And each of those buildings actually did show a structure, an architectural structure that reflected both bodily things and also pathways of human movement, which indicates a philosophy and use, I felt. And so these... Griffith Observatory was, you know, under renovation, and it was too Hollywood anyway when it came down to it. These were beautiful... buildings made 100 years ago or more just for around a telescope. And so I was interested in those forms with this hole in the center, which is the telescope. And this is a third of the Clark Telescope Dome, which you just saw. And what I did is I traced, because it was very cold and I only had morning access, what I did is traced the floor, just took the Mylar and cut a template of the floor and brought it back to the studio and then laid the tracings in it. Since the stains are never from the place anyway, like I'm not tracing Clark Telescope Dome stains. So I placed them all in there, and then this is a silhouette, a line silhouette of the entire constellation. And I worked on it in thirds and had to register each, you know, third. My studio is 20 feet wide by 60 feet long, so you get a sense that this, the whole, I think the dome is 40 feet in diameter, but it was it took a pretty long time. And then this is in preparation for a wall painting at the Art Gallery of Ontario. And I'm showing you this is not a finished piece, but this is how I work out the underpainting for this. And I was able to do this. I've started to do all these projects and paintings and drawings, and I'm, you know, working remotely with this, where I had a sign painter I work with. He went there, and I figured it all out and made a pounce drawing, which is a little tiny dots like Michelangelo used to use, and you pounce chalk through it, and it goes on the wall, and then you have a drawing on the wall. I worked out the entire, all the colors and everything, and for the underpainting in the studio, the way I just showed you, and then we made a pounce drawing of the drawing that you saw me drawing of the whole silhouette. And then he went and painted it. And then this is the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, which they invited me to do a project in their forest. They have 100-acre forest behind their museum. And I went and visited it, and I love forests, but I was like, sorry, I love forests, but they're perfect. I don't have anything to do, you know, to do there. I love to go camping in them. And so I asked them if I could see the speedway, and they, we all went, and it happened to be the weekend of the 400, the Indianapolis 400, and so I couldn't get onto the track, but they gave me a tour, and they told me, I was like, do you have stains anywhere? And they're like, sorry, we clean everything. Like, they really, it was cleaner than Las Vegas. Las Vegas is really clean. But the Indianapolis Motor Speedway was really clean. So most of the stains I found were actually in the pit where they let the tire stuff accumulate, the rubber from the tires accumulate, because it's better for taking off and stopping or something like that. And I have to say, I came to the speedway from the ground up. I'm a tourist. I'm not like a big NASCAR fan, although it's interesting to me. Just like nobody in my family works for the stock exchange or anything. It's kind of like, how is the world all put together? But you see the black is what we're tracing, and we're making we're just shaping, tracing the silhouette of that. This was a skid mark. It's like a 250 foot long by maybe a 25 foot wide skid mark, and the chalk lines indicate the registration to draw it. This is a victory donut that Dan Weldon did in 2006, I think, and this is a tracing of one of the pits in my studio. So you can kind of see how detailed it is. I think I had like 9 assistants for 5 days, and it was about three or four people per, no, it was 12 assistants, 4 people per pit for 3 days for the very intricate ones. And then we had some more gestural ones in the last 2 days. I was like, I'm not going to have a show. I got to get moving. So we moved faster through some and chose to document less detail. This is a constellation. This is what I'm talking about, you know, how I would layer things. It's not a very deep one. Generally, they have much more layers than this. But I'm showing this as a sort of a process shot of the... we remove layers of the tracings in order as I go down, because there are so many layers. So these two drawings have this one mark going through them, and we've removed a lot, like all that orange in the front thing, we've traced most of that drawing, and what's left to draw is what's beneath it. So if you want to make an Ingrid Kalam drawing, that's how you do it. Good luck. And this is one of those drawings. This is, again, 7 feet by 11 feet. And it's it is number 258 drawing. This is just, I just finished this right before, I guess, so this is 2007. This is me painting pregnant. This is just in April, days before my daughter Willow was born, and it's the painting from the that drawing. And this is the painting entirely. It's 6 foot by 10 feet, and it's painted like a puzzle again, still the same system. So I started out with, each of these systems started out very simple and got more complex, although things have gotten simpler. I'll show you, but this is a detail. Enamel on aluminum still. This is, I think, number 265 drawing, which you saw in process. And it made this painting from number 265 drawing. So the titles have also changed since, as the subject matter has changed, and things have changed. I've gotten more specific with where things are taken. Like, I think the turning point was I made a bunch of drawings from the Clark Telescope Dome. So at that point, there were LA river stains in the Clark Telescope Dome. I was like, I wanted to share with people the layers of the system that I was using, or the layers of elements. So I started instead of using onomatopoeic titles, I started using titles that were descriptive, more let people into what I was working with. Now, this is where I say it's gotten simpler, because like that Frogtown Turf War, wall painting at the ICA, this isn't a palimpsest, but it opened the door to super graphics and it being just one line. Just like those were one, that was one mark, but it was a palimpsest. This isn't really a palimpsest. This is the Dan Weldon Victory Donut. And I always, it's a 2000, this is titled, the 2005 Indy 500 Victory Donut, Traces of Dan Weldon. So this is the only piece I've ever done where I actually named a person who made a mark. It probably is the last, as far as I can figure. But this is very tall. This is about 13 feet high by 80 feet. It goes all the way around the room. And it's actually fluorescent red on red. And it kind of looks like a big Valentine or something. I was happy with it because it let people in. My work is so involved that sometimes, you know, that where it starts has gotten removed from people knowing where it came from. And the large scaleness of it, I felt, was important with the Speedway to share. That one mark doesn't even fit in a 13-foot thing. It's pretty tight for a car, 13 feet to make that. Anyway, this, I just threw this in because I'm actually in a new place with my work, and one of the ways that I am dealing with it, my work, I'm actually working in oil paint now, just in the last couple months, on aluminum still, and this, one of the ways I was dealing with it is, not the oil paint, but the changes, is to go make a print with Pace Editions. And so this is the plate size in there is 20 by 30, and it's aqua tint and soft ground etching. And it's how I work. I'm very hands-on. A lot of what I do needs help, but from other people, but the way that I get my ideas is actually not through thinking of things sitting in a room somewhere, but doing things. So I worked on this, and I've never done aqua tint before. And so a big difference is I'm using all of the stain information, but in different ways. So each plate has several stain marks on it, either communicating them with different, like the blue plate, the dark blue is one stain. In the positive space of a tire mark from the Speedway, it's all Speedway, but of that the rest of the blue is the positive of it. But so there's two marks communicating two different, whatever. Each plate is like that. And the transparency is something I haven't been working with in my paintings. It is, I have been working with it in my drawings, but whatever. I just thought I'd open up a can of worms. And that's the end. Any questions? Please.
With your titles, this is just a silly thing, but as you were saying them, I thought, how do you spell that? How did you even, write those down, and then how important to you is it that somebody understands how to read them?
Oh, it's not that important. It's spelled phonetically, and it's, when you get into it, then you get into languages, really, and alphabets, and, so it was all English-based, because I don't speak any other languages, unfortunately, and, capitals, but all normal symbols, and then it was interesting for me, for people to try. That was sort of an exercise in abstraction of language, signifier and signified, like what does this word, how does it, you read it, and, just the translation of it was like translating the sound into a word. I must say, it's uncanny timing. I wasn't planning to get pregnant, but I'm kind of glad that I'm out of that translating the world through sound at the point where my daughter is learning language, because it frees me to just listen to her and not, say another, come on. Yeah. But basically it's an abstraction that the onomatopoeic. I started them, they sounded very cartoony, and then after a little while there are only so many onomatopoeias, poetic sounds that we recognize, so. And there were things that one person could say alone.
Are there any parts of the aluminum that you actually let show through?
No.
The layers?
Mm-hmm. It's primed with a metal sealer. I'll give you all my secrets, but the aluminum primed with a metal primer, and then painted on top of that, so it's all white behind it in the middle.
What made you think of splatters to get across your experience?
Say it again?
What made you think of splatters to get across what you're trying to get across?
It actually, if I go all the way back to before splatter, like before the street stains, like the first Lep of Zerpow, the one that was kind of blobby and more cartoony, it was the third slide I showed you with light blue. It was, the Schlu project was based on these 30 stains, and I was in film school, and I was interested in, film gave me a perspective of, I had always been painting, and I was like, well, what is painting? So that's why I wanted to stay within art, an art thing, and I wanted to use the stains to communicate what painting was. It's about liquid. And this was from a failed project, and there were 30 stains on my floor that were beautiful, actually, but kind of simple. And then, like I said, I had been thinking I worked on that for 3 years and expanded it by placing, kind of like backwards fractals, stains, combining them to make larger and larger stains, but it was still that same 30 stain information, just changed sort of configurations of that. And at a certain point, I made a show for Post Gallery, and I thought, and I had the piece, it was a 30-foot piece, I mean, it's a giant piece, and I thought, okay, now I have the show, I'm going to see what happens if I do something else. And before I had thought of expanding that project into stains that were out in the world, but it felt too narrative of myself. And I think that's because I was in school, and I was at Skowhegan, and I was at all these kind of, collectives of people that were similar, so it wasn't very interesting. It was like coffee stains or I don't know what, And then... When I at the point where I made this decision to go out into the street, I went out in front of the gallery that I was going to have the show in, and I was out of school, and I'd been to Germany recently, and I had all these other thoughts, and my cousin had visited and told me about my grandmother's death, and it was, I didn't care. What she told me, it wasn't actually upsetting about my grandmother so much. It was really much more upsetting about my mother, that she had held it, and what we try to contain, protect our children from, and stuff. Just this relationship. So that's what got me tracing the street stains, because it was intense. Like that first time I was tracing, I was in shorts. There were truckers driving by, like making lewd comments, and I was with tracing paper fluttering around me. Like I didn't have a system, and I think it was a psychological. It helped me. My thoughts pushed me to do this, and then I made this piece, which I didn't show you, and I was very pleased because people thought it looked more like art and not like, I thought it would be indexical of things in life, my life, and it looked like art, and so that was really curious to me. You know, so I did the show with this new, the piece, not the first piece, the second piece that I did on the street stains, and then that opened up what I think is most wonderful personally about art is that you get to go out in the world. When I was in a young person, I studied dance, and for me, dance shut me in rather than open it. I think dancers and choreographers, it opens the world up. But for me, it shut. You know, I was in practice all the time. My hair was wrong. My boobs were wrong. Everything was wrong. And it really, you know. But art for me opened me into the world, and it allowed me to go out and have adventures. And at first, that was very spiritual and like lonely, and now it's turned into a way of life. But
do you ever think about going into the medical field because of the way you speak about your sketches being x-rays and in your earlier work with the vertebrae and the brain?
No, my mom's a physical therapist, so it was coming from my childhood, and she's very scientific and stuff. And probably dance, even. I don't know. My mom's a physical therapist. My dad's a physical education, you know, like a gym teacher. My sister is a nurse now, but she was a physical. I come from a very physical family. My sister was a fitness instructor, you know. So it was kind of, you know, just what I was around, I guess.
Do you ever make your own stains?
Lord, do I ever? No, I do. I have no interest in tracing them. You know, especially now with Willa. I mean, but no, I don't. I don't make any. Those first 30 stains were made in the studio from this failed project. So I made those, but I don't. I have actually traced stains at the studio that were afterwards, like a crate. My husband had a shop in the studio, and a crate, spray paint, or overpaint, or the spray paint, and I don't have any patience for it. I don't like it if it reflects my life. I'm much more interested in it being about a parade of information that's out in the world rather than it reflecting, because I impose my own, I'm bringing it into my system anyway. I'm going to have to work with it for a long time, and actually, I really enjoy that I have people help trace it, because that adds another layer of bringing other people into my process where I'm retracing over and over these things that other people have translated. And they're different. Some people are really see like micro, every sand grain, what do you call it? The aggregate of the concrete affects what a mark looks like, of course. You know, so if you have fine sand, it looks teeny. And if you have a big chunky concrete, you'll have these big holes in it. So it's interesting to me. And actually, I don't trace inside very much. The Albright Knox invited me to do this residency, and they were looking for places I could trace, and they were showing me all these interiors, and I was like, I use interiors to contain the spaces, but I don't trace stains from interiors at all. It's kind of like my form of landscape painting, all of this. Like, the stains are out in the world, and then the buildings might be a way to frame it, or a painting might be a way to frame it. You know, the rectangle is a way to get a grip. And I never liked landscape painting as a student. I didn't feel that I could get a grip on how to cut it off or make it into a picture.
back there.
You,
I had a question about your color, because it's a big issue. I mean, that's a major function of your paintings. Your color sense is really wonderful. And I'm wondering, are those codes for types of stains or colors you choose, or like push-pull theory, or in terms of, you know, how you make it? Like in one painting, you had an orange and a blue mark on the left side. Uh-huh. And there you have sort of black. How would you make that decision, creating that hierarchy of color relationship?
That's a good question. That's what I don't talk about, because that's kind of private. I mean, basically, it's these systems I've been working on for years. So whatever, you know, it's like that's what I can explain to you. The color is very joyous, and it's for me, or not joyous. I love color, so it's joyous figuring out the color. The colors are sad and happy, and but they're kind of more about sensation. And how I choose the color is that I don't figure out the color the picture at once. Even now, when I'm painting in oil paint, I like figuring out, you know, part of a puzzle, like, okay, this is going to be orange, and then I'll think of the next color, and then think of the next color, but I'm not thinking of the picture as a whole, so that there's all these surprises when, because it's paint, because the drawing is like a puzzle, I can't possibly, especially now, see all of the areas that will be a color, you know, I choose one, and then I choose the next, and then I choose the next as I paint as much as I can see of where that color will be. And it makes for a lot of surprises. But I also go around looking at color, and I worked for, when I was a young artist, I worked for Janet Fish and Chuck Close and Martha Diamond and who else? I worked for a lot of people. I did a small short gig with Eric Fischel, all these realist painters, kind of funny, but Harriet Shore, Nancy Davidson, all these people who I got to watch how they paint, which I highly recommend to students if you have the opportunity. I was just telling Terry, I was interviewing a studio assistant yesterday, and he had worked for Al Held, Chris Burden, and Nancy Rubens, and Charles Ray and Judy Pfaff and someone else. Anyway, I was like, and then, so how did he get those pictures?